From a basement in Ealing, a team of ineffectual superheroes casts a watchful eye over the world of nerd. Whenever there's a movie trailer to be dissected, whenever there's a Joss Whedon project to be discussed, whenever there's a squeeze to be squeezed, there will be... The Dork Avengers!
Hello and welcome to issue 3 of the Dork Avengers podcast, the fortnightly look at all things geek that is already proving unsurprisingly popular with that hard-to-reach, overweight, 20-something bearded male demographic. I'm Peter, Jean-Luc Picard, Dylan Trenchard, and with me, as ever, is Duncan...
Duncan Wesley Crusher Heaney, or Duncan Tasha Yar Heaney, or...
You are not hot enough to be Tasha Yar.
Duncan, that Data who wasn't Data but came at the end of Nemesis, so it was exactly the same as Data Heaney.
B9. I wasn't going to do those anyway.
What?
I wasn't going to do those. If you'd let me continue...
Fine, okay, right.
Thank you.
Hello, you're Peter, Jean-Luc Picard, Dylan Trenchard, you bloody wish.
And with me, as ever, is Duncan William T. Riker Heaney.
Post or pre-beard?
Pre-beard.
You son of a bitch.
Welcome to the podcast.
Humor! I love it!
So, Dunk, what have we got coming up today?
Well, my breakfast at the thought of you being Jean-Luc Picard. Other than that, we went to see Kill Keith this week, which is a movie starring Keith Chegwin. We'll be running Super Speeds through some Sonic the Hedgehog forums, and we'll be looking at some Monty Python forums. Also this week, I believe you had a new experience.
Yep, we're going to be talking about that later.
Yeah, I think we both...
we both know that was a mistake.
Yes, it was, although I blame Gamerbase. We'll talk about that later.
Let's get on with the show.
Dork Avengers! Assemble!
So, Dunk, what have you been up to in the time since the last podcast?
Not very much, if I'm honest. I bought Skyrim yesterday.
Okay.
Which is a video game.
You buying a video game? This sounds unlikely.
It's craziness. It's like the whole world's gone mad. Anyway, I put it in to about 10:30 last night when we came back from seeing Kill Keith.
Yeah.
And when I looked up, it was 4:30 this morning. I think what must have happened is, you know that episode of Doctor Who? Where they talk to the silence and then they lose whole hours so they don't remember it.
Yeah.
I think what must have happened is something similar to that.
So saying that Skyrim comes equipped with its own perception filter.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So Skyrim then.
It's good. It's good if you're thinking of picking it up. It is good. It is incredibly addictive and absorbing. I'm wondering if I'm going to stick with it for much longer though, because it is fantasy and fantasy tends to bore me.
Okay, what's the actual premise of the game?
Well, it's set in your traditional fantasy world. There are lizards with breasts, so, you know, that's your demographic sorted.
Yep.
And you just kind of wander around the world questing, fighting dragons, using magic, you know, typical fantasy stuff.
Sounds a lot like World of Warcraft.
Yeah, it is, but without the annoyance of people. What's great about the game is you can kind of set yourself up to be whatever character you want. So at the moment, I've decided that I'm going to be a thief who only steals vegetables.
What experience do you have for the role of thief? Have you ever stolen anything in real life?
I've stolen your heart.
Have you ever stolen anything that wasn't diseased?
No. But I think this is the thing about computer games. You can be anything you want. I am a thief, but I'm a very specialist thief. I'm like Robin Hood, except less interesting.
I think if you're like Robin Hood, you're like the Maid Marian and her Merry Men version of Robin Hood.
Yeah, and you're like rabies. The disease. Anyway, point is, it's good, I'm tired. Luckily, I'm terminally unemployed, not in a relationship. I wonder if the video games have anything to do with the being terminally unemployed and not in a relationship.
I'd say there's a positive correlation. Also, the fact that whenever we do this podcast, you buy a 12-pack of Coke.
Diet Coke. I'm not a monster.
Game over.
Well, what have you been up to this week?
This week, I went to the third Den of Geek pub quiz.
I went to the first Den of Geek pub quiz and was never invited back.
No, funny that. We wanted people on our team who knew stuff.
Oh.
I don't know why I was there. because the thing about the Den of Geek quizzes is that they're movie quizzes. And I know very little when it comes to movies.
Well, you know about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
I do.
You know about Power Rangers Turbo, the movie, or whatever.
Turbo, a Power Rangers movie.
Oh, right. Because I don't seem to recall many Power Rangers in it.
They turn up 20. They morph 20 minutes from
Stop
the end.
Stop talking about Power Rangers. When you talk about Power Rangers, it's more boring than that time you tried to teach me what BODMAS was.
Brackets, powers of division, multiplication, addition, subtraction. It's a basic mathematical concept.
You know what's interesting?
What?
Any other topic.
Fine. Den of Geek movie quiz, we came fourth.
Out of how many?
Four.
So what questions gave you trouble?
Most of them.
Do you remember any? Because sometimes you go to a quiz and there's a question there that's just really pisses you off. Or they give you the wrong answer. I mean, I remember once we went to a quiz, you probably don't remember this, back when we were at school together. And the question they gave was, what is the real name of the Incredible Hulk?
Okay, as everybody knows, Bruce Banner.
Nah, yes. Their answer, David Banner. David Banner is the name of the Hulk in the TV series The Incredible Hulk and the subsequent movies that, you know, we can try and forget, yeah, but never can. It's not David Banner, it's Bruce Banner. It's Bruce, goddammit, Pete, and they wouldn't give us the damn point.
Did we try and argue it at the time?
Oh, you bet we bloody tried to argue it at the time. Oh, we were just sort of like waving placards in their faces saying, you know, Bruce is the answer.
I don't know, I think they needed to be more specific with the question.
Yeah, what is the name of the Incredible Hulk in the Incredible Hulk TV series?
Yeah, that's like asking what's Spider-Man's real name and expecting the answer to Kuya Yamashiro.
Which is the name of Spider-Man in the Japanese Spider-Man series where he's basically turns into a giant robot.
He has a giant robot.
Right.
He doesn't turn into a giant robot.
Because that would be stupid. That's how you prove you're a much bigger geek than me, because I would have said, you know, it's like them expecting Spider-Man's name to be Ben Reilly or Miles Morales.
Yeah, but they weren't in a TV series, whereas Takuya Yamashiro was.
Yeah, touche. The scars of a bad pub quiz can linger for many years.
That's true, but it's not just pub quizzes. I mean, Trivial Pursuit, for many years, has propagated the myth that Dalek creator Terry Nation created Doctor Who.
Really?
Yeah, for years, Trivial Pursuit had the question, name the person who created Doctor Who.
And of course, wait, I know this. Ron Grainer.
No.
Russell T. Davis.
A little bit. The correct answer to the question is, of course, Sidney Newman and Verity Lambert.
That was my fourth answer.
It wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Your fourth answer was Stephen Moffat.
Yeah. My fifth answer was Stephen Fry. Your life is a Trivial Pursuit, so...
Thanks. At least I've been doing something that involved leaving the house.
You are listening to The Dark Avengers. Please remain inside your head.
So, movie review. This week we went to see Kill Keith. It's a murder mystery set in the world of Breakfast TV with an all-star cast. Okay, it has a cast.
Yep.
Including Keith Chegwin, Tony Blackburn, Joe Pasquale, and Russell Grant. For American listeners, because I know we do have at least one American listening.
We only have one American listener. Hello, Ryan.
These people are Breakfast TV and radio personalities from 10 or more years ago. So enough time has passed for them to become kitsch. So, Pete, what did you think?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. It was a really good take on the kind of the world of breakfast television. And I thought there was a lot of sharp comedy going on there. You had the main woman who's kind of the Christine Blakely type if Daybreak were more successful and interesting.
Yeah.
And you've got the weird narcissistic presenter who's also a little bit creepy. That was a character I felt I could really identify with.
As a parody of Breakfast TV, I mean, let's be honest, Breakfast TV is a big target. It's an easy target, but they hit it.
And I felt the main character was where the comedy in the film slightly fell down.
I didn't think he was particularly likable.
He was a cause of a lot of problems because he lives in this kind of fantasy world. And I found that really jarring.
Oh, you mean he lives in his own brain? You mean he kind of cuts away to his fantasies all the time?
Yeah, he keeps... And the first time he did it, it was like, okay, this is an odd choice for the film to make. But I guess it makes sense in the kind of slightly fantastical world they're living in.
Yeah.
But then they kept doing it.
They overdo it. It's like, have you ever wondered what a British version of Family Guy would be like? I actually found myself starting to get irritated by them. And I'm not an irritable person.
Yes, you are.
Oh, f*** off. The bits where they're not doing the cutaways, the bits in the studio where they're doing the Breakfast TV stuff, are really, really good. It's like a roller coaster ride. You go, good, 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 good. Cutaway! Cutaway, cutaway, cutaway.
I did quite like the one relatively near the end when it was a kind of Batman pastiche. I think any film that spoofs 60s Batman is okay by me.
Yeah, but that's because you really love 60s Batman.
It is the best of the Batman.
The best bits were the bits involving Keith Chegwin, where he's out on the street. Was it Cheggers Knocks You Up, knocking on people's doors and
yes,
spoofing?
No, know. I felt that Keith Chegwin actually came out of this film really well. I was very dubious about a film which promoted itself as starring Keith Chegwin. I still have flashbacks to the version of Macbeth that I watched at school.
Oh, I had to watch that as well.
Where he turns up and he's about 9 years old, kind of singing.
And everyone's like, oh, that's Keith Chegwin. And then Julia gets the knockers out. And everyone forgets that Keith Chegwin's in it.
I think you're thinking of Romeo and Juliet there, Dunk.
Oh, that's right. I'm mixing up my school Shakespeare videos.
Yeah.
I think maybe Lady Macbeth gets her breasts out there.
After we finish recording the podcast, we'll look it up on CNDB, the Celebrity Nudity Database.
I did not know that existed. Now
you do now.
What I liked, Keith Chegwin really played up on his, you know, hey, wahey, cheeky chappy persona.
But at least he didn't get his cock out.
Oh, God, yeah. He presented, what was that show?
Keith Chegwin's Naked Jungle, which was filmed on the set of kids' show Jungle Run.
Really?
Yep.
I remember, and it's kind of a nudist game show. I remember the Sun's headline after was more Chipolata than Chip and Dale. But no, I mean, one of the kind of... There's a serial killer offering potential replacements for the daytime TV host.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, as it goes on, each of the potential candidates, which includes Joe Pasquale and Keith Chegwin and Tony Blackburn, sort of, start showing their darker sides when Keith Chegwin starts being a bastard as well. He plays on that really well. It's a bit like having a really cute puppy suddenly bite you. It's just unexpected.
Depends on what you're doing to the puppy, I suppose.
So, I mean, when I say it's a murder mystery, I mean, it's promoted as Richard and Judy meets Saw.
I felt that was misleading.
Well, there are horror aspects to it. It does open with somebody being tortured in a cave, and there is a serial killer going around killing these minor celebrities.
That's true, but there's nowhere near the intensity of Saw. And frankly, there's nowhere near the banality of Richard and Judy.
I like it's true. Even though they were trying to parody Breakfast TV, it's still not as banal as Richard and Judy actually is. You're completely right.
You know, obviously it is kind of a horror film, but I think it's a comedy first and a horror way second.
It's kind of straddling the line between comedy and torture porn. Like, I did wince in a few parts. I mean, when Joe Pasquale gets his comeuppance...
That's about as brutal as the film gets.
I winced at that.
Yeah.
While I was wincing, I was also laughing out loud because it is also really funny in a dark, sick way. So basically there were three movies going on. There was kind of the torture porn horror movie.
Yeah.
A Breakfast TV parody.
Yeah.
And there was kind of surrealism. See, Tony Blackburn isn't actually played in this film by the radio DJ Tony Blackburn.
No, he's played by a much younger actor. And it was an odd choice.
Yeah, one point he gets a lookalike.
And the lookalike, the joke is that the lookalike is the real Tony Blackburn.
The thing is, that joke is kind of totally on its own. Completely different from the rest of the style of the film. There's also other moments that didn't work for me, which was the farce. The best farce is when the main character makes a bad decision or just circumstances force him into a position where there's no other option available, except for hilarity ensuing. In this, all the farce was completely avoidable. So, for example, there is a bit where he's got a hold of Dawn's knickers, the female presenter of the show, and he knocks on the door and he realises he's holding them. So he decides to put them on the back of his head.
The thing is that moments early, he's pulled them out of his pocket. And that should have been a clue to him as to what to do when she came to the door. It goes back to what I was saying last issue about implausible stupidity.
Yeah. I think the cast all did a good job.
They did. I mean, obviously, we've already talked about Keith Chegwin, but the rest of the cast were great as well. I mean, I think Susanna Fielding did a great job as the kind of the every girl TV presenter.
She was cute and likable, and you could see why the main part, Danny, had this crush on her.
Yeah, and the guy playing Danny, he played that kind of slightly creepy, stalkerish fella quite well.
The male host of The Breakfast Show, Dave, who was played by David Easter, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, he did what he had to do very well.
Yeah, which was just be an absolute arsehole. And the celebrities. So Tony Blackburn didn't really have to do anything. But Keith Chegwin, Joe Pasquale. I tell you this, after this movie, I would quite like to see Keith Chegwin return to TV. As long as he keeps his trousers on.
I'd like to see him playing a detective in a crime drama.
Can you imagine if him, Joe Pasquale and Tony Blackburn formed a detective agency and solved crimes in some American city? Cheggers fights crime.
Yes, I can imagine that, Dunk. And it would be terrible. Unless they had a talking car.
Then it would be the second best show ever. But all in all, Kill Keith. So, recommended?
I would definitely recommend it. I think it's the best of the three films we've seen so far. Yes, there are a few unfortunate missteps. There are some odd choices in terms of tone and style. But overall, I'd say it was an enjoyable film which did more right than it did wrong.
Out of five, then? Marks out of five.
3.5.
3.5? We're not doing half marks.
I gave Tintin 3 marks last week, and this is better than that, but not good enough to get 4.
Half marks, disgraceful. I think that it's not a wholly successful film, but it is probably the most interesting film I've seen for a long time. So I'm going to say 3. Because the highs are really high, the lows are really low.
And of course, next week sees the release of Twilight Breaking Dawn.
Oh, God, do we... No, no. Right, putting my foot down, we are not going to see Twilight Breaking Dawn.
Listeners, if you would really like me and Dunk to review Twilight Breaking
Dawn...
Why are
you doing this to yourself? This is like self-mutilation. It's just like you going home and beating yourself.
If you want to see us reviewing Twilight next issue, then please do drop us an email, dorkavengerspodcast@gmail.com.
Please don't email in. I love you all, except for, you know who I'm talking about, you. You can piss off. But the rest of you, I love you all. Please don't make us go and see Twilight. It's awful.
We will abide by the listener's decision. We will be recording the next podcast on the 26th of November, and so we'll have to see the film a day or two before that. If we get at least 10 emails telling us to go and see Twilight, we will review it next issue.
I'm going to be unavailable. I'm washing my hair.
You're never unavailable.
This is the Dork Avengers podcast. If you're listening to this outside, you're no friend of theirs.
And now it's time for Forum Watch, the section of the show that both asks and answers the question, how low can you go? Dunk, what have you found for us this week?
Well, I've been playing a lot of the latest Sonic the Hedgehog game, Sonic Generations, so I thought it was kind of appropriate to look through some Sonic the Hedgehog forums.
It's never appropriate to look through Sonic the Hedgehog forums.
Much like the games they love so much, Sonic the Hedgehog fans are loopy. But to be a Sonic the Hedgehog fan requires phenomenal dedication because, as you know, Sonic the Hedgehog games haven't been particularly good.
Don't say that! We're going to get letters now.
Well,
it'd be nice if we got letters.
I think the series reached its absolute low point in Sonic the Hedgehog 2006, where Sonic had a love story with a very human and possibly not quite adolescent princess. So Sonic the Hedgehog fans require dedication. And one of the things that is well known about them is they get upset over every little thing. One of the things is, when Sonic the Hedgehog went to the Dreamcast era and it became, you know, 3D, Mario 64 style, modernised, they changed Sonic's eye colour to green. The Sonic fans hate this. It makes them furious. They will spit acid at it. It's, you know, it sounds like a minor change, doesn't it?
It does, but now the fans view Sonic as some kind of green-eyed monster.
Literary referencing. High five. You're listening to the Dork Avengers Sophisticated Literary Podcast.
Now talking about Sonic the Hedgehog.
So, I've been looking at a number of forums, actually. Sonic Blast was my first stop. As this first post by, I think he's calling himself Sonic Adventure 2. Because this rant has reached other topics and I can't talk about it there, I've decided to make a new topic on it. Sonic's green eye colour makes no sense in Sonic 4. Sonic 4 is part of an original classic series in which Sonic's eyes were not green. Now, Sonic Team is rewriting history. They are putting a modern green-eyed Sonic in a classic world.
Whoa.
This makes no historical sense to the story, which is why I don't like the idea. Basically, what his problem is that Sonic the Hedgehog 1, 2, 3, and presumably Sonic and Knuckles, have black eyes, and Sonic 4, being a continuation, has green eyes. That means it's breaking the continuity of the games. The story's all ruined.
Yeah, it does seem like a bit of an overreaction.
And to be fair, most people agree. Spin says, my opinion on this matter is quite simple. Eye colour is not equal to gameplay. It doesn't matter what colour his eye is, it doesn't impact the game in the slightest. A nice moment of sanity, end of thread.
As ever, it's not the end of the thread, is it, Dunk?
No, these threads don't end. Sonic Adventure 2, he's not going to let this lie. He says, it should be a much bigger issue. The whole history and heritage of the series is messed up due to this unspoken, drastic change of our main character.
No, it isn't. I mean, in Doctor Who, there's the character of Leela in the 70s. The actress Louise Jameson famously didn't like wearing coloured contact lenses. So they just had an episode where she witnessed a massive laser blast. It changed the colour of her eyes. One line of dialogue sorted. I don't understand why this is a problem for the Sonic fans. Sonic sees a lot of explosions.
Every time he kills a robot, there's an explosion.
Exactly. His eye colour should change about 5 times a week by the Doctor Who principle.
So the discussion goes on for 6 more pages. about the colour of his eyes, eventually moving on to the buckle on his shoes before Ahmad finally has had enough and just says, I'm closing this thread. This is just dumb. I mean, the reason I showed you that one is that just shows just how obsessive and nitpicky the Sonic fans are.
But it's not like we can talk. Have you listened to the first two podcasts that we did?
Yeah. So we move to sonicstadium.com. What is your opinion on human and furry relationships in the Sonic series?
This is a lot like the human and turtle relationships from last week.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, turtles is very niche and furry seems to be a rapidly expanding fan group.
I suppose turtles aren't so much furry as kind of scaly.
Before we get into that though, Pete, what are your thoughts on Sonic characters having relationships with humans?
I think it would be painful. I mean, obviously Sonic is a hedgehog and hedgehogs are notoriously spiky.
I think you're missing the point, which would help if you're in that specific situation. Okay, so your objection to it isn't on ethical grounds, it's that it might be a little bit uncomfortable.
I think so. I don't mean that human and hedgehog reproductive organs are compatible.
Let's see what the Sonic fans have to say on the matter. See, Glenn believes that as long as a character is well-written and well-rounded, I wouldn't care if they were an octopus from the moon or a talking spade, let alone a human.
I'm not sure I could ever fall in love with a talking spade.
Well, I'd be fine as long as you called it a spade.
I don't know, I guess a relationship with a spade could be useful, though. Whenever you get yourself into an awkward situation and someone says, dig your way out of that one, you can!
And I wouldn't date an octopus, because they're all hands.
An octopus doesn't have hands, it has kind of tentacles. Have you never watched hentai?
Do you know what the other problem with octopuses is? They're suckers. Why do you look like you're about to actually hit me? According to Octarine, it ain't bestiality if both parties are sentient.
It is. It definitely is.
You're completely right, it totally is.
You know, if I were to go next door and molest their dog, it would definitely be bestiality.
The dog is sentient.
The dog is sentient and the police would be right to arrest me for it.
Whether such a thing is palatable, continues Octarine, is a matter of personal taste and art direction. Okay, so it's not sleeping with an anthropomorphic hedgehog that's a problem. As long as you have good art direction, you make it look tasteful. I actually might not seeing a background human furry couple, since in a world where both existed, there'd inevitably some intermingling.
Not inevitably, no.
Oh, come on, yes there would.
Fine.
Yes there would. Yeah, you know, if there's a hole somewhere, some guy's going to try and put his penis into it.
What are you trying to tell me, Dunk?
I'm saying that you probably shouldn't go around with holes in your socks. I mean, what's your thought? What's your opinion on the whole furry thing? If you had a crush on Chewbacca...
If?
Would that make you a furry?
Yes. And if you had a crush on Lumpawaru, that would make you a furry paedophile.
It's Lumpawaru. Sounds like a disease.
Lumpawaru is Chewbacca's son from the Star Wars Holiday Special. So not only would you be a furry paedophile, but you'd be a furry paedophile with no taste.
Jayhawker.
He sort of sums it all up, really, doesn't he?
He does. F***ing an animal would probably give you a rash.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, there's this thread I found here back on sonicblast.org. Sonic gets shot, what do you do?
Reload.
The question is, would you call paramedics or would you call animal control? It's quite a binary question.
What do the people think?
Well, Breezy is the first one to comment, and she seems to be questioning herself. She says, well, this is random, lol. I said animal control. Why?
Why? Why? Tell me! Tell me! Why?
Well, she asks and answers her own question. She says, Sonic equals hedgehog equals animal, lol. I love that Breezy finds herself so amusing that she can still laugh at it after all these years.
I did not lol. I sold. You sighed out loud.
Emily the fox.
I bet she's not a fox.
Well, I don't know. She certainly seems to have a fox agenda going on.
Oh, you mean she's right-wing and hates liberals?
That's right. She says, if Sonic gets shot, I wouldn't really care, lol.
Don't just say lol. Put some effort into it. You're an actor. You're a thespian.
If Sonic gets shot, I wouldn't really care. Because then Tails will be the main character in all the games.
See, now she just sounds mad.
Funny that. Not lol funny, but funny. Well, the White of Sky is feeling particularly defensive. She says, new mission, protect Sonic with my life.
Well, no, she's already failed because I was playing Generations... day before yesterday, and I killed Sonic at least 14 times.
The official result of the poll was that 53.3% of people would call animal control and 46.7% of people would call paramedics. Although, of course, when I say 53 and 46%, I do, of course, mean 8 people and 7 people. So there's not a lot in it.
You know what I'd call?
What?
I'd call this a giant waste of everybody's time.
Agreed.
It's such a senseless waste of human life, isn't it?
So, Pete, what forums have you been looking at this issue?
Being a bit of a comedy nerd, I've looked at the Monty Python forums this week. The first post I see here is the Lady Python. A very naughty boy, and he is, you know, his first post on the forum... Where is the very attractive lady who was in a few of the sketches like the marriage guidance sketch? Is she still in the entertainment business? And especially, what was her name? I think he just wants to look her up on CNDB. Someone just leaps straight in. That'd be Carol Cleveland, one of the people who often vies for the 7th Python title.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're actually in competition for it. And then a very naughty boy comes back with his second post on the forum. Cheers, Dennis. What a woman she was. Or still is. Four. I'm fairly sure I saw her on a documentary serving drinks to the other pythons minus her top. I may be wrong, but I may be right too.
Well, that's... I like that he's hedging his bets there.
He's covered all the options.
Whatever the answer is, he's wrong. He is very, very wrong.
Arthur Names says, does anyone know if she's still available for dating or serious relationships? I feel like there would be nothing worse for Carol Cleveland than to date a Monty Python fan. Because your whole life would just become a series of reenactments of sketches.
I can imagine during climax it'd be, nee, nee, nee.
Impersonation is kind of something that happens a lot with the Monty Python fans,
well,
you know.
Monty Python is eminently quotable.
Apparently so, and it's eminently over-quotable. Eric Idle 125...
Wait, I mean, there's another 124 Eric Idles.
Eric Idle would certainly like to believe that there is. But yeah, Eric Idle 125 says, what Python character do you find yourself imitating all the time? Dunk, what Python character do you find yourself imitating all the time?
Mr. Creosote?
Eric Idle 125 says that the one he impersonates the most is Arthur Nuge.
I don't know who that is.
Neither do I. But in a close second for Eric Idle 125 is the dead parrot guy. And he says, sometimes in random places at random times I'll scream, hello, Polly!
That's both bizarre and irritating.
He must be great at parties. Shawnee says, oh, good question. I'd probably be a good Trotsky. Or Hitler, although I'm female and a lot taller. I can also make a dead parrot.
I think we can all make a dead parrot.
I've got to say, I'm actually quite liking the sound of Shawnee. You know, she likes to dress up as Hitler. She can happily kill parrots.
It's like a match made in heaven.
She's my kind of girl.
Aren't you still in love with Zelda Williams?
No, she started tweeting about sport last week.
Oh, right. What?
I know.
No.
It's over, Zelda. But looking around the rest of the forum, you know, there's a few oddities. I mean, there's a happy birthday Graham Chapman thread, which makes me think that no one's actually told them.
Hold on, I've been having a look. What you've been talking, because we've got this on screen as we're talking.
Yeah.
This fandom seems to be marked by pockets of weirdness and endless people quoting it.
Oh, there is a third group of people.
Yeah?
Yes, there's the Michael Palin fangirls.
Well, he is a studly man.
He is, and he's also apparently quite a nice man.
Really?
Which has resulted in the thread, Michael Palin, nicer than Jesus. Now, apparently this was sparked by an offhand comment that Marcus Brigstock made on the late edition.
Yeah.
Jeremy Almond Pooh tries to take it off onto a bit of a tangent. I wonder who would talk the most at a dinner party. Well, I mean, I don't think Jesus would be doing much talking because he'd be busy chopping bits off himself to turn into bread. But at the same time, Jesus wasn't afraid of making the odd sanctimonious speech every week.
in many ways, Jesus was basically He-Man at the end of the episode. I think we've all learned something here today. Getting leprosy is something nobody likes, but don't be afraid to touch a leper. I'm Jesus. What's this forum guy's name?
Jeremy Almond Poo.
That shit's nuts.
Really? Is that the level we're at now? Well, Jesus really gets a bashing on here.
Well, to be fair, it's not a Jesus forum, or church.
No, it's
as
not.
I believe they're more commonly called. It's a Monty Python forum.
Well, Johnny chips in saying that, no, he doesn't think Michael Palin is nicer than Jesus. I don't know how nice Jesus was, But I sure would have loved to see Michael at the Last Supper with Jesus, not letting Jesus talk at all. I don't know, Michael Palin's always seemed like a fairly respectful kind of chap. I imagine he'd let Jesus have his say, and by all accounts it was pretty difficult to shut Jesus up.
Well, I imagine Michael Palin can probably be quite boring at dinner parties. Like, imagine you're Jesus, stop being Jesus-y.
Consider the lily.
Why did you ever tell you about that time I went round the Sahara?
Yes, we read your fucking diaries.
Dork Avengers, assemble!
Okay, I'm coming. Now, one of the things we try to do with this podcast is introduce each other to new experiences.
In the attempt of reviving our stale 11-year friendship.
Indeed. Let me say in advance, this week I introduced Peter Dylan Trenchard to the joys of LAN gaming at London's Gamer Base Centre in the Trocadero.
Yeah, thanks for that, Dunk.
Let me just say in advance, I'm very, very sorry. Pete, I'll let you take it away.
Well, yeah, we went to the HMV Gamer Base at Piccadilly Circus, where we found out that most of the computers there don't work. And then we had a very frustrating 47 or 48 minutes of attempted online gaming.
My thinking behind this whole idea was that I wanted you to experience online gaming because it's not something you've ever done outside Warcraft. But my initial idea was to take you home, sit you in front of the Xbox, and let you play some, say, Call of Duty or Left 4 Dead over the internet. Get an experience of that. But I thought doing it at a gamer base where the computers, in my head at least, would be silky smooth. It'd be a simple matter to set up. We could both play at the same time on two separate computers, so there was no kind of screen squishing or...
Yeah, that I didn't like that about Halo.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sounded like a good idea, didn't it?
No.
I am outraged by Gamer Base, to be honest. We paid for an hour.
Yep.
We spent the first 20 minutes trying to get something working. So it took us about 20 minutes to even get a game going. First, I tried Call of Duty World at War, because it was the only game I could get working.
Right, and Dunk, do you remember when we sat in this very spot about 4 weeks ago and complained that Halo was just a bunch of running around shooting stuff?
It's true, but the point of online gaming isn't the game, it's the social aspect of it.
See,
which you didn't get.
No.
Which is my problem with Gamer Base. The reason I chose Gamer Base is because I thought you would get that social aspect of it there.
I didn't. All I got was killed a lot. And I know you told me when we started playing Call of Duty that death was an inevitable part of the game.
Yeah.
But it was an inevitably frustrating part of the game, because my experience of that was that I would basically get up, walk 5 steps, get shot from someone I didn't see, respawn somewhere I didn't know where I was, I'd walk 5 steps, get shot by someone I couldn't see.
No, it was a bad choice. And it wasn't really a choice. It was just, I didn't so much as choose Call of Duty World at War. It was just the first game I could get working.
Yeah.
So then we did Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah, and I'll admit that was an improvement.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I wanted to show you Left 4 Dead 2 is, yes, it's just running around shooting things.
No, no it wasn't.
Also slashing them with a sword.
Yeah, I got a big samurai sword and I was like, I'm Power Ranger! Zombies!
Okay, remember the Power Ranger rule? Every time you mention Power Rangers, I'm going to punch you in the nose.
But then you told me I couldn't use the sword. You were like, oh, don't use the sword to go up against the bad guy. He'll kill you.
Okay.
And did he kill me?
No, because...
No, there we go.
No, he didn't kill you because we all saved your ass. In Left 4 Dead 2, you're basically 4 players surviving a zombie outbreak.
Yeah.
So you've just got to fight through waves of zombies to get to a safe house at the end of each level. In the midst of all the usual zombies, kind of, you know, the usual shambling, we watch EastEnders kind of zombies, there was this kind of special zombies.
And special players.
Yes, you. One of those is the tank, which is basically super powerful, does loads of damage and requires loads of kind of concentrated fire to kill it for more players.
Or just a sword, like I did.
No. If you go up to it with a sword normally, you will be dead.
But I wasn't.
Because I saved you.
Maybe I'm like Neo in The Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just like him. You are just as likeable and interesting as Keanu Reeves.
Dude.
Wow, it's like he's sitting next to me.
I'll take the blue pill.
Do you know what that impression is?
What?
Excellent!
You've just embarrassed yourself.
Not for the first time. See, again though, Gamer Base let me down, because the reason I chose Left 4 Dead is because although the game is about shooting, really where the fun in the game lies is the social aspect, and that everyone has to work together cooperatively to win. So it fosters a great sense of camaraderie between you, because you're constantly going, help, help, I've got a jockey on my back, or help, help, kill this zombie for me, help, I'm in trouble. Ah, oh, you're in trouble, I'm going to help you.
But in reality, it was just me and you, and then two people we didn't know.
Yeah, but well, I assume GamerBase would have other players there who would also be playing. I assume GamerBase would also have voice chat. No, what I should have done is taken you home, put the Xbox on, call up a couple of friends, and had you play online with headsets.
And if you had a couple of friends, that would be great. I did enjoy the co-op aspect of it. I thought it was nice that I was able to progress through a level without necessarily dying. You know, I liked the fact that it wasn't as mean-spirited as a lot of online gaming is. But at the same time, I can't say I'll be going back to it.
Because you didn't get the complete experience. It's quite telling that after GamerBase, I went home and I immediately started playing Left 4 Dead with my friend. And I had a wonderful time. It was exciting, it was tense, there was laughter and jolliness and brilliance, and it was everything that GamerBase wasn't, basically. So, Left 4 Dead. I mean, positive experience?
Relatively, yeah. I mean, I'd give it a good 6 or 7 out of 10.
Okay. Call of Duty, positive experience?
No. 2 out of 10.
Okay, and then we played one more game. Which I'm not even going to rate.
It was ridiculous. What was it called?
Blur, from the now sadly defunct Bizarre Studios. Bizarre Creations.
Yeah.
It's a racing game. Basically, it's Mario Kart with licensed cars.
No, it's not. Mario Kart's fun.
I think maybe we needed more people, but it was just dull.
It was a leisurely drive around London.
And Brighton.
And Brighton.
Yeah, the two tracks we played were Brighton and Hackney. Which is very telling about Pete, I think, because between tracks, you're allowed to choose your level, kind of out of one or two. Pete had a choice between Barcelona or Hackney, and he chose Hackney.
More likely to be a comic shop in Hackney. I was hoping at some point I'd just be able to get out of the car and go and browse a comic shop.
I think you may have missed the point of the game.
You should see me playing Grand Theft Auto.
So, I don't think we should even bother rating Blur, to be honest.
5 out of 5.
From my perspective, my intention being to show you online gaming can be good did not work out because GamerBase was awful. I mean, how can I show you how fun multiplayer gaming can be
when it isn't?
If we can't get it working?
You know what, Dunk? I forgive you.
It's hard to hate you when you say that.
Of course, what Dunk doesn't know is what I've got in store for him next week.
What?
Nothing.
You're listening to the Dork Avengers, wasting their lives since 1983.
And that merry jingle just about brings us to the end of this issue. But don't worry, there's just about enough time for the contrived joke section, which is fast becoming a fan favourite.
It's not a favourite with me.
So what contrived jokes have you come up with this week?
Well, in next week's paper, the makers of Kill Keith put out a casting call for the sequel, Kill Brucey, but they're surprised when the entire world applies.
It says here that the Silence from Doctor Who are to get their own spin-off show, which critics have already described as unmemorable.
Nice.
Because if you see him, you can't remember.
Shh. If you explain the joke, it stops being funny. A new Thunderbird series fails to go off the ground. The cast was willing, but there were strings attached.
And finally, the makers of Sonic Generations are denying accusations of plagiarism, following the discovery of a deleted scene in which the original Sonic the Hedgehog is shot in the back by Malcolm McDowell. Because Star Trek Generations.
Stop explaining the bad jokes. Just end the damn podcast already.
Fine. I've been Pete Dillon Trenchard.
I've been Duncan Heaney.
And we've both been the Dork Avengers. Goodbye.
Bye.
And so we come to the end of another pointless episode in the lives of our socially awkward duo. But remember, wherever they speak of geeks, wherever they've heard of nerds, you'll find... The Dork Avengers!